Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to those facing issues in our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. It's been a busy couple of weeks for Northumberland Hills Hospital. At the end of June, it held its annual general meeting. Last week, the hospital received an additional $1 million in funding, and it is anxiously awaiting to hear if it will be chosen to be the pilot for the provincial government's proposed revamp of the healthcare system. Some of this represents big changes to our hospital and the delivery of healthcare to the community. If nothing, the staff at the hospital are very busy. With me to discuss all of this is Linda Davis, President and CEO of the Northumberland Hills Hospital, and Pam Wenth, the new Northumberland Hills Hospital Board Chair. Welcome, ladies.
Thank you.
Thanks, Rob.
Let's start with last week's announcement about the additional $1 million in funding. Linda, what is this? What's significant about that $1 million?
Well, it's very significant, Rob, and we're very, very grateful for the ministry's support of our hospital. We have been, as you know, struggling over the last, I guess I've been here for 6 or 7 years, and we've had our struggles. This will allow us to have some stability and be able to care for the growing number of patients that we are serving. Our volumes continue to grow, and we've had to open more beds. Last year, we anticipate we'll continue to open beds as it's needed, and the funding really provides us the ability to open those beds and the stability of maintaining a balanced budget.
Now, when you talk about opening beds and getting $1 million, first of all, what does the $1 million go towards? When you talk about opening beds, what does that mean, and why is this money significant? Because you guys have gotten money before, and it's been sort of temporary funding to help with in the interim. Why is this different?
Well, certainly this is what they consider base funding, which will be there year after year after year, which is one of the reasons why we can actually go forth, hire staff to be there on a regular basis versus trying to call people in when we have increased patient volumes. So we can have a staff there on a regular basis and open beds on a regular basis and provide that support.
So when you're talking about beds, we're not talking about going out and buying something from Mattress World. We're talking about something completely different. Maybe you could explain
sure.
how that works.
Okay, well, I always talk about the hospital in terms of how many beds. We were built for 137 beds, which means we can accommodate in physical rooms that were built for patients with call bells and those sorts of things. We could accommodate 137 if we were using every single inch of that space. To date, we are funded for 96 of those bed spaces within our hospital, and with surge funding, we go up as high as 104. However, we continue to be far greater than that. Does that answer your question?
I think it does. So what we're talking about then is more nurses, more equipment, than all the things that are necessary to help someone when they're staying in the hospital.
Absolutely. I mean, we know that anytime you have patients in the hospital, you need to be able to provide care to them. You need nurses to be able to provide that care. And we have staff on 24/7. So if we admit 4 or 5 new patients, that means we need to have another nurse on 24/7.
So just using that formula, how many people are you looking then to hire? How many new people would that mean?
We've had the people on staff, but may not have been able to offer them that ongoing full-time position in terms of not having the stability of knowing that the funding will be there year after year.
So how many people are you going to convert then from being, say, on-call or part-time to being full-time? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, and I'm not sure exactly what the number is. We may have already converted some of them. And I think it's really about being able to see our way clear to say if we're now experiencing 120 patients on average, we need to staff with 120, not but staff for 120 patients.
The government is very big on saying that it's ending hallway medicine. How does this money end that problem?
It's a good analogy from the perspective of if we don't have the ability to hire nurses and bring them in and open that bed space in an inpatient unit, the patient would wait in the emerge. Unfortunately, we have that happen from time to time just because we don't have enough turnover in our beds quick enough to be able to. So people may wait in the emerge before they get admitted into an inpatient bed. But the real opportunity is to have them, if they need to be admitted, have them move quickly from the emerge into an inpatient bed and be cared for in an inpatient.
So according to the Ontario Health Quality on Health Quality Ontario, sorry, I'm going to get that name right eventually. They keep all the stats for all the hospitals, and they say that the length of stay in an emergency for all patients being admitted to the hospital on average at Northumberland Hills is 23.6 hours. What is the significance of that number, and how does that relate to what we're talking about in terms of moving people out of emergency and into the hospital?
Well, I think that if a physician in an emergency department sees a patient and says, we believe you need to be admitted to hospital, it's taking us an average of 23 hours from the time the patient is first arrives in the emerge to get them into that inpatient bed. So some of that may be their exploration in the ED just to determine what's wrong with them and do they need admission, and then actually get them into that inpatient bed.
Almost a day.
That's correct.
Almost a day. So that this money is going to help make that situation better.
That's our goal. Our goal is to be able to get patients into an inpatient bed much quicker than what we have been able to do.
Now, what about, though, the rest of the system when I come into the emergency? So if I'm just your average person, it takes about 2 hours, 1.8 hours, according to the stats, to go from arriving to seeing a physician. And then it's... if there's low urgency but not being admitted, it takes about 3 hours to 4 hours to be looked after. How is this money going to help that situation? Or does it?
It's not necessarily directly targeted to help that situation, but we are looking to try to address some of those situations. Some of the stay within the emergency department is also dependent on tests that need to be done. So if you come in to emerge and you're seen by the physician, they will often order a number of tests. In order to get the test done, to actually have, if it's a blood drawn and you need to wait for the results of the blood, that does take time. It just takes time to process. So some of that time we probably won't be able to shorten. Our real goal is to ensure, though, that we move people through in being assessed, having their tests and their diagnosis as quickly as possible, and then admitted if they need to be admitted.
Why is that not as big as a priority?
I'm sorry, why is it not as big
a priority to lessen that the speed of that process? Because that's where most of us, I mean, let's be honest, there's not everybody gets admitted to the hospital.
No.
So in terms of the average individual, that's what we as average people are most concerned
yes.
about. So why is that not an equal importance?
I guess it's always of equal importance. And I'm just suggesting that the funding that we just received won't necessarily be working there. Mm-hmm. It'll be working more to provide inpatient spaces. I think that what we are doing to try to decrease that is looking at whether or not we can create what we call a fast track, where patients who have a fairly simplistic need can be seen by a nurse practitioner, can be put through very quickly. We understand that any wait is too long for any of us, and I think that's what we're always trying to look at. Sometimes time needs to be taken, though. A test won't be done. It won't be cooked for 30 minutes. So we have to literally ensure that there's some time that those things happen, but we are always trying to decrease the non-valued time for the patient.
Okay, good. Thanks for explaining that, because I think that's I think what most people are concerned about. This is not the first nor the largest increase in base funding you received. I understand last year, May of 2018, you got $4.1 million from the Liberal government, and almost half of that went towards base funding. So in terms of financing, can you explain, I mean, that's a lot of money, $2.1 million a year ago, and now another $1 million. What does that tell us in terms of what's going on at the hospital?
I think it tells us two things, Rob, and I was very grateful for last year's funding as well. NHH has, and I think we've perhaps chatted about this before, has had a long-standing, what I call a structural deficit, a deficit that was never rectified early on. I think it probably, you know, dated back to two smaller organizations coming together to create one organization and suddenly moving from care that was never really an ICU patient that we have now would never have been cared for in either the Cobourg or Port Hope Hospital. We are providing a different level of care to our community at this point, which requires a different budget level. I don't believe that was ever recognized when the hospital was first formed. And it took us years to be able to have the government to recognize that shortfall. That was rectified last year. And then again, we've been also suffering from no increases for a number of years. So the $1 million this year just really creates that stability for us going forward.
Are we where we need to be? I guess, Pam, this would be a good question for you, is are we where we need to be in terms of funding? Have we reached our are we on an even keel now, or do we still have room to make up?
Well, I'd like to say yes, but when we look at the projections for growth in this community and the age groups that are growing, unfortunately, or being one of them, the issues that they will have with health will require more care in the hospital. So there is going to have to be more, we will need more funding in the future because the demand will be greater. People have more of the diseases that require acute care. So we're going to be stable for a while, but we know that we need to start planning now for 2036. And I just wanted to make one comment, too, about what the impact on the board of this funding is, that by creating a more stable financial situation in the hospital, we can all spend more time and thought on the future so that we can start building today, or at least planning to build for what we're going to need in 2036, 2046, based on the growth in this community.
Because that was one of the things I wanted to ask you, is that how does this money affect your decision-making as a board? And so you're saying it helps you somewhat to start planning for the future, but when you get the $1 million injection into your budget like this, I mean, how does it shift around the table? How does it shift discussions? How does it shift priorities? What goes on around the board table that's different now that you have this money?
Well, certainly, it's a lot. I'm gonna say it's a lot more fun. If not that boards are about fun, but just having the opportunity to talk about other things other than how are we going to, you know, get through this year financially. It has created an environment where we have time to talk about the strategic issues that we need to talk about. We have time to think more about future risks and how we're going to manage those. It's just an easier environment, and one that really every board wants to have, and we have not been in that situation for certainly as long as I've been there.
I think if I can add a couple of things, Rob, that the board is able to now really look at. We're looking at what are the services that are needed in our community that we're not providing right now. And we are actually in an opportunity to say, how can we attract those services? Can we partner with our partners, Peterborough Regional Health Centre or Lake Ridge Health, to have those services provided here so patients don't have to travel? Those are the kinds of things we can now entertain, because we can afford to actually grow a little bit with the stability. We can begin to talk about how we implement a new clinical information system, which we wouldn't have been able to dream about doing if we hadn't the financial stability to say, yes, we can see our way through to how we can pay for a major purchase. So there's many things that I think now have opened the door that we can begin to think about the things we really need to look at.
I'm really surprised. Most of the time when I have a conversation with the hospital, it usually ends up we talk about long-term care and the need for long-term care in our community. And here we've gone a whole 20 minutes and we haven't talked about long-term care. So what's changed? Because usually this is where what we come back to is the need for acute level care beds.
Yeah. I think because we've recognized that the ability to change the long-term care situation is a long-term solution. As much as I would love to have a solution today, we do know that the Golden Plough is going to be redeveloping and increasing their beds, but that's still 2 years out, or maybe 3 years out, I'm not exactly sure. So I think what we've realized is that we've had to create our own solutions. We are caring for a number of individuals who no longer require long-term or require acute care, but are still within our hospital because they aren't able to move to their next destination. And so I think we've recognized that that's going to be a norm for us, at least for the next few years, and we have accepted that.
Well, we know that there are, 34,000 Ontarians waiting to get into long-term care. And in Picton, the other day, I think it was 2 days ago, the H.J. McFarland Memorial Home got 76 new long-term care beds and got an upgrading for 84 of its existing beds. Why aren't we getting that money?
I don't know, and I think Picton probably needs it as well. I know they have an aging population, so I don't begrudge them getting the dollars. I think it's really there is a plan for further expansion. I do know, as I said, the Golden Plow is getting more beds. I think it's something that certainly MPP Pacini is aware of and aware of the need in our community for more long-term care beds.
I guess the question then becomes, how urgent is this? I mean, are we in a situation that's urgent, or are we going to be okay to get to our 2 or 3 year horizon where all of this starts to come together?
That's a really good question, and I don't know that I have the answer to it, because it really depends on how much faster our acute volumes grow. We saw more and more patients requiring acute admissions into our hospital last year. If that continues or it speeds up even more, we may be in the crunch before long-term care beds come on. But I'm hopeful that we can begin to think about if there are other ways. I mean, we do have great partnership now with two of our retirement homes in the area to be able to have patients who are waiting for long-term care, but can be cared for with some additional support in a retirement home, have been able to move into a retirement home and wait for their long-term care bed. I'm hoping that we can do more of that and then be able to at least offset the increase.
With the extra beds that aren't being used in the hospital, has there ever been a discussion around converting those to long-term care beds? In the same way that might be in another institution?
I think, it is something the hospital did a number of years ago. I think in 2010, early on, mm-hmm. they actually had, I can't remember whether it was called long-term care, but they were caring for long-term care patients. And I think it's one of the challenges that is difficult. I believe we should really try to put people who require long-term care in a much more home-like environment. So I wouldn't want to see that become a norm for us. Mm-hmm. I think it's always difficult, even for the patients who do spend a couple of months with us, to be in hospital versus in a home-like environment.
I'd like to move on and talk a bit about the annual general meeting. Pam, when you just went from vice chair to chair, is that correct?
That's correct.
What would you like to see achieved over your term in office?
It's interesting you should ask, because Linda and I had that conversation. And again, it speaks to the fact that we have some room to breathe, hopefully for the next few years. My focus as chair is going to be around developing our board and developing their capacity. So giving them or providing them with training and education to do their board job more effectively. And also to give them something back, because as you know, our directors don't get paid, and they spend a lot of time at the board table and at committee meetings, and I would like to see them come away from their experience with the Northumberland Hills Hospital Board as better board directors and with skills that will allow them to go to other boards and share that. So I'm going to be focusing on things like risk management, ethics, things that are important as hospital board directors. And I think we do those things very, very well. But I also think that we could all benefit from further education.
So that looks after the people who serve on the board. What about the hospital and the services it provides?
Well, certainly, as Linda said, we're looking at what services the hospital provides today, what services should we be providing, how would we do that, do we have enough space for that, some very basic questions. And as I'm looking at the forecast, the demographic forecast for the community, how do we as a board ensure that the hospital will be able to provide the same level of exceptional care it does today in 20, 25 years?
Is there one thing in particular, though, something that the board feels it needs to be addressed that isn't being addressed right now that you'd like to see done in the next year?
In terms of hospital operations, no, I don't think there is something that's missing. Would we like to start thinking about the future and starting to build today, yes. And I think that's where our conversations are going to be centered in terms of the hospital itself, is what do we need to start doing? How much money does our foundation need to raise? Working with the foundation to develop a plan for that. Starting to ensure that we are going to have the human resources. We've got programs, our doctors have programs with, I believe, Queen's University to start bringing more residents in so that we can attract more doctors. And maybe if there is an issue, that's the one, is not that we have any control of it, but we're certainly mindful of, is attracting the family physicians to this community that our patients are going to need in order to have the continuity of care that's so important.
Because I guess one of the roles that you have as a board is to be a bit of a watchdog in terms of keeping an eye on everything on behalf of the community. So how do you see yourself fulfilling that watchdog role?
Yes, certainly we do have a role of oversight, and the hospital is extremely good about providing data for us to ensure that everything is staying on the rails. So, for example, monthly, at our monthly or bi-monthly meetings, the Quality and Safety Committee is able to monitor the key areas of quality for which we are responsible, and that would indicate to us if there's a problem. Then we also have a Finance and Audit Committee who does the same thing with financial indicators. We get those at every meeting, and again, we're blessed with a terrific CFO who not only provides the data but helps us understand it. The Governance Committee makes sure that we have the policies and procedures to be effective as a board, and also the education that we need to do so.
On that note, then, I think we'll take a break. My guests today are Linda Davis, President and CEO of the Northumberland Hills Hospital, and Pam Wendt, who is the new board chair. Please stay tuned to Consider This on Northumberland 89.7, your truly local source for news. We'll be right back. Hello, and we're back. You're listening to Consider This Northumberland, and I'm your host, Robert Washburn. You are tuned into Northumberland 89.7 FM. My guests today are Linda Davis, President and CEO of Northumberland Hills Hospital, and Pam Wendt, the new board chair. And we're talking about all the activities going on at the hospital. Pam, I want to come back to the annual general meeting for a moment, or maybe Linda, you can jump in on this as well. And I noticed that in terms of the agenda, palliative care was sort of a centerpiece to that. And you had multiple speakers on the subject. Trish Baird, the executive director of the Community Care Northumberland, spoke about Ed's House, which is a palliative care center that they're creating up on Ontario Street here in Cobourg. What is the impact of Ed's House going to have on the hospital services, if any?
I'll start with that, Rob. I think from our perspective, we see it as a great addition to the continuum of care. We know that, and we do have a palliative care unit of 6 beds that will continue to operate. We care for far more than 6 patients who are palliative throughout the hospital any given day. And we also think that people should have a choice of being able to be in perhaps an even more home-like environment if they can. Sometimes patients will need, because of their symptoms, they may need the support of the hospital until end of life, but many times they may not need that. And so the Ed's House will offer another great, great opportunity for people. So we see ourselves working very closely with the staff. They're already working closely with the community palliative care team, and we'll continue to work closely with the staff then at the hospice as well as the hospital.
Now, one of the things about palliative care that maybe not everybody understands is that it's not just simply an end-of-life service, that it's much more comprehensive. Can either one of you give us an idea of how this merges in with sort of the continuum of care that is given?
I think it was actually very poignant when Dr. Francesco Mule commented at that evening about how, you know, we often wait till the very end of life to think about people being palliative, and that's not the case, because we're all palliative to a certain extent. We're all on that trajectory. And I think it's at what point do we need to reach out to people to help support them in that way? So I see it, and our community palliative care team is doing just that, as Community Care Northumberland has done for years, providing support to people in the home, visiting, bereavement counseling, all of those things. So I just see this as building another pillar in our continuum to provide an actual residence for people to have end-of-life care.
I'd like to, Pam, talk about the financial report that was given during the meeting. This year you had a surplus, nearly $750,000, or 1% of your total revenue. How do you justify the need for $1 million in base funding when you're able to nearly find that same amount of money in terms of cost saving?
Well, again, not a surprising question. It is a little difficult to understand, but the and Linda's going to have to help me with
sure.
this one. The $1 million that we got, we can't just take that money and apply it to the, any kind of shortfall. I mean, it's specifically tagged. The surplus that we have is not because we had too much money. It when we go into a given year, we're not never entirely sure of how much funding we're going to get. So our management team does an excellent job of not spending money if we don't have to spend money. In this particular case, I believe that that resulted in us having a surplus when all of our funding came in. I mean, Linda, Mike.
Yeah, no, I think it's a really good question, and I think one of the things that happens is any good hospital, or any hospital, I should say, should be striving to have a 1% surplus, because you don't know what's going to hit you the next year. Supplies could suddenly increase. You could have a flu outbreak that costs a huge amount of dollars, and we have to be ready for any of that. So we strive to have a 1% surplus always, and we've not been able to do that before. Many of our peers are able to do better than that, but we are very grateful to be able to do that so that we can in fact have that, I won't call it a cushion, but it is that opportunity to create that real stability and sustainability. And then going forward this year, one of our other challenges is we see the number of patients continuing to grow. Last year, on average, we cared for 114 to 118 patients. As I said before, even at the AGM, in April, we cared for 121 patients on average. So that number is growing, and so the $1 million that we received this year will be there to support that increased level of care.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to ask, add one other thing. As Linda said, hospitals should have 1%. That's something we aspire to and we haven't had before. But one of the things that allowed us to do this year as a board was to actually put $500,000 of that surplus into a reserve for future investment. And again, any good organization should be able to do that. But we have a huge investment coming forward in a couple of years, which I'm sure you're aware of, the clinical information system. So that's what a good board does, is say, okay, we know that's coming, we know we still have to raise money, but if we can, we have to help ourselves. So that's what we've done. We've taken $500,000 and put it in a special account so that we're starting to build the bank for that investment.
I also noticed too, though, in the annual report, there was talk about the expansion of the dialysis clinic, because there is a growing demand for dialysis visits. I understand it's gone up from something like 7,279 last year to 7,364 this past year. So tell us more about what that means.
We were very pleased this year to have the support of the Ontario Renal Network to open two more chairs or spaces for our dialysis patients. Unfortunately, with the aging population and just the evidence of, or the frequency of diabetes, which often leads to kidney problems, we are seeing an increase in the number of people who require kidney dialysis or renal dialysis. And so we also project that number is going to continue to grow, again, because of the growing in the aging population. So we anticipate that our physical space, we managed to find a space for two more this time round, but we are out of space. And if we look at the projections, as Pam has said, we're now looking at what will 2035 look like, or 2045, and we need to be thinking about that and planning for how can we accommodate that. So we are in the process of doing a study to look at the projections, look at the space we have, and see whether or not changes will have to be made internally.
Well, it's kind of interesting too, because when you start looking through all of the numbers, for example, diagnostic imaging exams have gone up by 4,000 in the past year. Births have gone up. Surgical cases gone up by 1,000. Chemotherapy visits gone up by 1,000. Outpatient ambulatory care clinic visits have gone up by 1,000. In every case, those are massive increases. And we the focus seems to be on beds and the number of people, but there seems to be a lot of pressure on services. Again, community mental health, telemedicine, all of those things are going up. So in terms of planning and moving forward, how do we steer our way? Because I understand you're in the third year of a five-year strategic plan. So how do you navigate those waters as we go forward with such incredible increases?
A really good question. I think it's at this point in time, we have when we did our strategic plan, we actually did an environmental scan to look at what would our population look like in 5, 10, 15 years. We have been doing an update to that, particularly for some of our ambulatory visits, so that we can do better planning, because that's just what we need to do. We need to be thinking out, do we have the physical space? Our goal is to, we've talked about a medical arts building. We're now talking about a health center, not a medical arts building. We want to be able to take some of the people who might be having services in our hospital now and have them in a health center, just on the same hospital property, but in a different building. And some of our specialists who actually are there and able to be in some of those in that area versus in the hospital. We need to be thinking about how do we prepare for our future, because we will need to be changing our physical space within the hospital.
When do you think we might be seeing plans in relation to that health center that you talk about?
I think you probably will need probably more information by the fall. We do have a study going on right now, and it's to be completed by the end of September. And then I think we'll be able to begin to talk a lot more to the community about what we're thinking about, what we need, and also what needs to change within the hospital.
I mean, shoveling the ground, what are we talking, like 2-3 years?
My goal would be that it is built in the next 2 years. Obviously, we have a fair amount of work to do before we get there, but certainly in order to look at what the hospital needs, I think it should be built within the next 2 years.
I noticed also in the report that there was talk about, you mentioned it earlier, Pam, the doctors teaching and the clinical students coming down. Someone might look at that and say, you know what, why are these doctors going off and teaching off at Queen's University? Why aren't they staying in their offices and giving more patients care and more hours and opening clinics locally rather than trucking off and talking in front of a chalkboard?
I think you'd have to ask that question of the doctors. I'm sure that part of it is their way of giving back and making sure that the doctors of the future are going to be able to be great doctors. And we have great doctors, so them sharing their skills and abilities, I think, is admirable. On a very selfish note, we know that, they make contacts with the students. They are also our ambassadors for our community, and demonstrating to those students that this is a great place to practice. And so I think there's a benefit to us as well. And I don't believe that they spend an overly burdensome amount, actually, of time in the school. I think a lot of distance learning goes on as well. So I think it is a good investment, and we're very supportive of them doing it.
And also the residents actually come and work at the hospital. So they're working with the full physician in the hospital setting. It's a great way for that resident to learn, but it's also, we know that when we teach, we also learn. And so I think it's a benefit to our physicians and our staff to have them there.
The foundation reported that they raised $3.1 million for capital equipment and have raised, in fact, $43 million since the opening of the hospital in 2003. Now, that money comes out of our community, and there's a lot of charities looking for money these days. How fair is this that the hospital board is tapping into $3.1 million from the community?
Well, I believe that the community wants to support the hospital, and that's why they donate the money. They want to ensure that for them and their families, there will be this level of care, close to home. which is, of course, our goal as a board as well, is to ensure that people can get their care close to home. And I believe that our community is willing to invest in us in order to get that care close to home.
But as board chair, I mean, do you think the provincial government should be paying for these capital costs rather than having it come out of the community?
If the provincial government's going to give us the money, that's also coming out of our taxes. So we really still are supporting it, whether we pay through taxes or pay through extra donations. I think we would all say, yes, it would be great if the government could give us more money. But on the other hand, we know how much of the provincial budget goes to health, and there is certainly a reluctance there to do so.
One of the big things that has happened over the last 6 months has been this application to become one of the first hospitals to buy into the Ontario Health Team model that the Ontario government's proposing. The idea, I guess, is to get rid of these silos and provide a more integrated health service delivery. Why are we a good candidate for this? Maybe
great.
You'd like to answer
that. I'm so glad you asked that question. I think our community and our healthcare providers within Northumberland County have got a long history of working together very, very successfully. And I know you know of a number of them already, but I just think we're already doing a lot of really good work. And this allows us the opportunity to actually organize ourselves even better as a team. I think we do a pretty good job, but I don't know that we have always provided that level of seamless care that our community deserves. I think we still have gaps in transitions between hospital, home to long-term care, wherever, and I think we need to really close those gaps. So I'm really excited. I know that as a team, we are now about 20 members around the table, and we're excited about the work that we can do. Whether or not we're chosen to be one of the early adopters of the province's Ontario Health Teams, we intend to continue to work together and look to provide better care for West Northumberland or Northumberland County.
So I guess the question then becomes one of, okay, if it might be great to get this, but then maybe the government comes in and says, well, wait a minute, we want you to do this. And they impose a template upon the hospital and the local healthcare providers versus what I guess is already happening organically and has been for quite a number of years, because I know in past conversations we've talked about this, these partnerships that you've built over the last number of years. So maybe is it really a good thing, or how do you negotiate that?
Yes, I think that's going to be the million-dollar question as we go forward. I believe everything I've heard from this government is that they want the solutions to be local. They want the solution to be local and centered around the patient and the family. And I think that if they can stay true to that, then I think that we would, I think we can truly deliver on a much better model and outcome than perhaps by having it directed by people who may not be close enough to understand what needs to happen.
Not a lot of people always appreciate change. And so if you were to sit down with those people and you were to say to them, you know, why is this good for the community? Why is it good to do this? Why do we need to change? Why can't we just leave it the way it is?
Because I think we still have silos between our organizations, and those silos have to go. Because I think we still don't do a great job in some of our transitions, as I said, and I think we need to do better.
I'm a bit of a computer geek, and I sometimes download beta software, and it's not always a pleasant experience. So why are we anxious to be the first, the beta? Why don't we just wait and let's see what happens elsewhere, and then we'll adopt best practices locally? Why is it good to be out there and be first?
I think we'd like to be able to design our future ourselves. We have a vision of what Northumberland County healthcare providers can do coming together. And I think we'd like to demonstrate that vision.
So, Pam, as we go forward, what should residents be looking for? What if you could paint a picture, what would that picture be for residents of Northumberland?
I think if my dream were to come true, that we would be meeting everyone's expectations for excellent patient care, excellent family care in our community, services close to home so they don't have to go down the road to get them, and a feeling that for our the members of our community that this is a great place to live because we have a great hospital and a great healthcare system.
I think if I can
Linda,
add to
yes,
it, I just want to add
the
whole,
question.
The from my perspective, because I think one of the pieces that we need to do much better is information sharing, communication of information. And we always hear, why do I have to answer those questions again? You've already taken this information, why do I have to answer it again? I truly hope that in the future, and this government is suggesting that digital health and communication amongst providers is going to be an expectation. We need to do that. We need to be able to get the tools to be able to communicate better with each other. We need to give information back to the patient. The health information is theirs. We need to find a way to get them access to their information. And that's work that needs to be done.
So when you're talking about that, do you mean like I could go on to a computer page and I could say, okay, what was my test results? And I could go and I could look at those test results or, you know, look at my x-ray or whatever. Is that what you're talking
Absolutely.
About?
Absolutely. Like right now, you can get on and see your lab results. If you have blood drawn and it goes, you can get your own lab results online. But you need to be able to have access to your entire health record or any of your health information. And yes, that's what I am referring to.
Isn't that, though, a little bit dangerous? I mean, we live in a world now where I can Google anything. So I could go in and I could look at a bone scan and go, oh my God, there's a dark spot right there, and then go Google it and find, you know, suddenly believe that I'm dying of the bubonic plague or something. I don't know. I'm not a doctor. But, you know, I could see that happening, people getting that kind of information and worrying in that regard. Is it really a good thing that we get all that information?
That's a good question, but I believe that it is still a good thing. I think that you now might worry because you don't know what the result is, and you might have yourself in a fret and you Google a whole bunch of different diagnoses and say, oh, do I have this? Do I have that? So you could be doing the same thing without that information. I think that what we are trying to do is to also really empower, perhaps for lack of a better word, individuals to own their own health. You and I have had this conversation mm-hmm. because I believe everyone needs to take their own health as a huge responsibility. We have the responsibility to keep ourselves healthy, and the more we know about our health state, the more likely we are to do that.
But don't, I guess the question then becomes one of, you know, I can go and pump my own gas, right? And yet, that's one thing that you don't mind doing on your own, I guess. But when it comes to your health, I mean, wouldn't it be better if we had quicker and easier service to a professional? I have a simple question. Oh, I've got this wound. It doesn't look that great. I don't know whether I should be in the hospital at the eMERGE or, you know, should I be calling my doctor? I just need somebody to kind of look at my cut and go, yeah, you need to do X, Y, and Z. You're fine. Go home, put a Band-Aid on it, drink a beer, whatever. How isn't that the system that we really want, rather than, you know, it's not the same as my grandmother's day when, you know, you put brown paper and plaster on somebody and, you know, a few herbs and you were fine. I mean, we deal with, you know, sophisticated mm-hmm. diseases that could literally kill you in a heartbeat.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Access is important. And I think, again, if we're using digital technology, we can begin to do more of that. We can do, you know, home visits by Skype. Or you know, have a video conference with a patient instead of them coming in, so that if you've got a bruise, you should be able to access a nurse practitioner, family physician, to say, this is what I've got. Should I be worried? Should I go to the eMERGE? You know, ideally, those would be the kinds of things we'd want to work towards, so that you do have easy access.
Last question, Pam. I know we talk about residents and we talk about people, but surprisingly enough, you actually have to be a member of the hospital to participate in the annual general meeting, and there's a membership and there's a fee that goes with it. Is that not correct?
Not anymore.
Not anymore?
No.
I feel misinformed.
There was a time that you had to make a payment and you had to join. Certainly everyone is invited to the AGM. You don't have to be a member to be there. The only thing the membership does, or the responsibility of the membership, is to vote on things like bylaw changes or accepting the financial reports. And the board of directors of Northumberland Hills Hospital are all members. In fact, they are the sole members of the organization in order to, say, approve those things that have to be approved by the AGM.
There's also a myriad Volunteer opportunities to both help in the hospital with patient care, but also to support the board and all kinds of other things that people can sign up for as well. Is that not true?
That is true.
Well, it's good that I knew that.
Yeah, no, it's true. In fact, when we have openings, we certainly go to the community. Sometimes we're looking for specific skills or experience, but we are very supportive of having community members join us on our committees. They gives them the opportunity to provide input as members of the community and to help us with our business.
Fantastic. I want to thank the both of you for taking time out of your incredibly busy schedules to come and talk to me today. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Rob.
Listeners, I want to draw your attention to an important story taking place related to Cobourg's waterfront as we're closing off here. On Tuesday evening, Council had a rather tense debate about the future of the East Pierin campground. Councillor Emily Chorley and Deputy Mayor Suzanne Seguin pushed to move towards a public consultation process focusing on options related to the East Pier, while Councillor Brian Darling and Nicole Beattie wanted to push forward with some more detailed and expansive approach by getting some design work done for both the pier and the campground. The idea behind it was to get the project moving more quickly so the East Pier could be opened sooner. Council was split, so the mayor sided with Chorley and Seguin to win the day, and they moved forward. There is no doubt the efforts to develop the waterfront are always emotionally charged and volatile for the public and politicians. So next week, Councillor Emily Chorley will be joining me to look at this debate, the public process about to take place, and all things related to the waterfront. So please join me next Friday at this same time. I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in today. Please join me every week as we talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference to your life and Northumberland County. If you have any suggestions about guests you'd like to hear on this show, please email me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com with your ideas. If you have any comments, questions, rants, or raves, please email me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can go to my Facebook page, Consider This. Or if you're on Twitter, you can message me at rwash. Your feedback means a great deal to me. If you would like to listen to this or share any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. There you will find past podcasts, news, and other information about life and politics in Northumberland County. Or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking time out of your busy day to listen in, and I hope over the next week you will continue to consider this.